Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to this July 4th edition of the Bubba Show. And, you know, I'll tell you, it's interesting. And, of course, the perversity of Wall Street able to try to maintain a rally in the face of yet another disappointing jobs number. And do we ever get tired of understanding how bad news continues to be good news for stocks? It's really amazing when we look at the jobs that were created. No construction jobs, no manufacturing jobs, just a bunch more of the part-time and minimum wage jobs that basically were designed for high school students and for people that were just looking to make a little bit of extra money. And yet we continue to try to celebrate this picture. And I'm sure, you know, we probably won't hear from the commander in chief because the number, once again, although 228,000 was more of a disappointment, basically like the entire past 6 or 7 years, in spite of the stock market continuing to make record highs. But as you and I both know, the everyday guy like you and me is not affected by the stock market. I mean, basically the stock market is in most of our IRAs and 401ks, but does not give us spending money to go out and feed our family and pay the bills that we have to pay. And I think that, to me, becomes the sadder tale. And when you get experts trying to justify a lousy number, and we continue to make excuse after excuse. I mean, if you're tired of hearing the excuses, raise your hand as to why all this is happening. You know why it's happening is because the bottom line is simple, okay? The Federal Reserve sits on nothing and has no idea on what to do next with their plan, because they have no plan. Because other than being intellectually smart people, from a common sense standpoint, they have none. Okay, I'd like to drop them off in a field somewhere and see if they could negotiate their way back to their home base, because I would venture to say that they could not find their way home, because basically they continue to hide from the trouble that is here. And Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve caught two big breaks this week because they don't know what to do. So they don't have to raise rates. I don't care what the bond market says. I don't care that they believe that rates are going higher. At the end of the day, they are not. The Fed cannot raise rates. The Fed will not raise rates. And this year, we can hear all the talk we want about a potential September raise. But right now, as I've said, not today, not just yesterday, but for years, that the Fed is lost and the unintended consequences that they are creating are going to be much more dire than just letting it go and taking care of it, ripping the Band-Aid right off. You cannot continue to try to manipulate an economy, manipulate money the way that the Fed and the other central banks are going on around the world. As we saw with China, they cut their rate again. Why are we cutting rates? Because we have trouble. We are trying to stimulate some more artificial growth. And you and I both know that that does not work. You especially know that if you've been among the long-term unemployed. And I think that becomes the bigger issue, is where is the growth, the spending, and the money going to come from if not the middle class? And based on what we're seeing and what they're doing, it is not coming anytime soon. And I think that is a sad excuse for how to run a company. And again, make no mistake about it, the United States of America is a corporation. The United States of America is the best corporation in the world. However, it is now being run by a bunch of people who have no idea how to run a business, have no interest in running a business, have no interest in getting help on how to run a business, and continue to think that we can throw candy or drugs at a child to say, it'll be okay. Okay, it's like going to the store and your five-year-old throws a temper tantrum because they want a toy and you break down and buy the toy, okay, because you're figuring that's the way to keep him quiet. So right now we are getting the Federal Reserve taking the temper tantrums that come from Wall Street, the minority, okay, but the minority, because they have the money and they have the lobbyists and they have the strength to push things around, continue to control the life of the average guy. And the average guy is not doing what they should be doing. They are not getting the benefit of the whole, the big story of the trickle-down theory that we are going to see. The money is not flowing into the hands of the people that need it most. Okay? The money is sitting either in the coffers of corporate America, big corporate America, in the coffers of others that have no interest of helping, have decided that hiring, why hire? I'll make you work harder. You don't like it, I'll find somebody else to handle your job. Because believe it or not, although there is jobs out there, we have the interesting experience of not having the right jobs for the right people. So you hear talk of millennials and how they're willing to change jobs faster. Well, why are they willing to change jobs faster? Because the jobs they're getting suck. Because they're making minimum wage. Because they're still having to live at home. Because the jobs that they need are not out there. Yes, if you're a coder, if you're an IT-er, if you've got that kind of experience, you are happy because there are many, many jobs available for you. But for the average guy, there is not. Tie that into the effect that not only is there not jobs, but now, because there is a liquidity lock on borrowing money, you cannot go into business for yourself either. So we are also destroying the ability to create entrepreneurship, which creates capitalism, which creates money and jobs. And of course, that is something that we don't have either. So where does it end? When do we finally get the ability to move forward? When is it time to say enough is enough? And again, I will ask this question that I continue to ask. Janet Yellen, what are you afraid of? Why is it that you are being controlled by strictly the banking cartel that is telling you that they don't want rates higher because they want to continue to steal the old man's bundle and take the money and to continue to get that free money without having to sweat or take risk? Where is it that we are became a riskless society that you don't have to take risks to take a lot of money? Now, you and me don't have that same opportunity, but that is indeed where the problem is. And at this point, I am sick of it. But this is a July 4th holiday weekend, and we are going to have fun, and we're going to be safe, and we're going to enjoy ourselves, and we're going to celebrate the independence of America. But really, what we want to get to is to celebrate the independence of the individual American that allows us to get back to where we were. But we've got a special guest coming up the rest of the day, Alan Nuckman. We're going to talk a little bit of business. We're going to talk a little bit about food. He's got a new food product. So we're going to have some fun today. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, and we're going to come back with our friend, Alan Nuckman. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. When love runs high, Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend, my man, Alan Nuckman. He's got so many different titles, I don't know which one to give him, but he's got something new and exciting coming up, which we want to talk about. But I know it's Bullseye Options and One Stop Option and the new thing, Original Al's Chicken Ribs, and pretty exciting stuff. And Alan's got a lot of experience in the equity and stock markets and actually all markets. What's up, Nuckman?
Good to be here, Todd. Thank you very much. Experience, that just means we're getting older, actually, I think. So 25 years. Yeah, I've been doing this since 1990, so I'm a young pup compared to you, but it's been a lot of fun, a lot of markets, a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, you know, it is funny. And Alan, by the way, you see him all the time on CNBC, on Bloomberg, on Fox, and of course, Alan and I have done a couple of things. He used to also do his show. What was the name of that goofy show you used to do, and you're still doing?
Oh, Traders Unplugged. It was a little crossfire. You take some market topics, and kind of like we do off the air, is just kind of banter back and forth. You know, we both got strong opinions. Everybody's got strong opinions, and it was a little bit of fun. People could see what goes on behind the scenes between people like us and how we approach things.
You know, one thing about you, and I will give you credit for this, you are really don't have an opinion. You're really just purely a technical, you know, look at it and you talk about it. Explain to us why you look at the markets the way you do and specifically how you do look at them. Because, you know, look, at everybody's got their own way of
right.
doing things, and you cannot not respect what people do and how they do it, whether you agree or you don't agree. And you've got a special way of looking at markets, and it's all purely unemotional, non-really involved with the day-to-day move, but more involved in, you know, the mathematics and the technical part of markets. So explain to the listeners
sure.
a way that Alan Nuckman, so when you go on TV and you say, I see this going to happen, how do you do that?
Well, I try and break it down simply, and the one thing that I've learned is the markets are a lot smarter than I am. We have fallacies, and reading the tape for me is job one. You know, everyone can have their opinion, what they think should happen, but it really doesn't matter. It's what the market does, how the market acts, and then how it reacts is most important. So for me, I've become focused strictly on options over the last decade or so, because you can control probability, and you can determine what type of trader you want to be. Do you want to trade? Do you want to participate in trades that have a 75% chance of success, or 60%, or 50%, or 80%? You determine what fits your risk tolerance. But I think it's a better way to quantify and control risk, to control your probability, and really focus on risk reward, because this is a long term endeavor. You know, no one trade should have any dramatic effect on you, good or bad. This is about putting yourself in the position for success over and over and over and over with an increased probability than just 50-50, and, you know, to be successful. But it's all about risk control. I focus on the technicals because it's a more objective way to look at things.
And you're right.
That's just the way that I've been brought up.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you're correct. And what I always tell everybody is, look, if one trade is going to make a difference, then you're in the wrong business, because it's a series of trades. And as good as you can be, there's still a lot of landmines and a lot of losers waiting out there for you no matter what. But you'll do a lot of stuff and you'll talk a lot about, you know, well, it hasn't made a high on this period or whatever. Or it hasn't done this. Explain to me and explain to the listeners, when you're looking at a chart and, you know, like we just saw the Dow earlier in the week go down, you know, 350 points. Now, you know, 350 points in an 18,000 point index is really not that big a deal. I mean, it's 2%. It's
right.
like a $50 stock going up a dollar. So it's not like we're like, oh my God, what the hell's going on here? Right? I mean, so when you saw that, what were your thoughts and what were you thinking about the market when you saw that kind of action?
Well, the first thing is I try not to think too much. Thinking gets me in trouble is what I've found over the years. I try and have a plan and execute the plan. It's all about money management, like you talked about. It's a series of events, our trades over a period of time. And to use my phrase that I often do, trading is a more sophisticated investor. An investor wants to make money. A trader has a plan to make money. You have to trade in this environment, and that means that you have to have an entry and an exit if it goes for you and it goes against you. You have to have that in place before you get in, It's not like it was 25 years ago where you'd buy, you know, 100 shares of stock for Coca-Cola, stick it in the drawer, forget about it. You have to have a trading plan because the business cycles are so condensed, the earnings cycles, so many things impact the markets that you're going to have major moves within the course of the year, but that provides opportunity. Give you an example, at the options, at Bullseye Options, we've traded Facebook back and forth three different times. You know, there are opportunities. If you just held it, you know, you would have had some uneasy, sour stomach riding through the ups and downs. But, you know, we used that last rally last week to get out of Facebook, left some money on the table, and that's a rule, is you're always going to leave some money on the table. You're never going to buy the low and sell the high. But we left some money on the table. We got out when it got made new highs last week above 86, and it kept going, I think, up to 89. But, you know, hey, that's what happens. But, you know, using a trading mentality, in the course of the last 50 weeks, there have been three big moves in Facebook, and we've been able to capture some. So it's more about psychology, understanding yourself and understanding the psychology of the market than trying to factor that, you know, that emotion out so you can be successful.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, when I do watch you on air, you know, now we obviously, you and I both know that the pundits are there to make news and they have to try to engage the audience. So they talk about, you know, Greece is the end of the world. And I go, Greece doesn't have the GDP of Indiana. Who gives a crap?
Wisconsin. It's equal to Wisconsin.
All right. Well, and of course, so when you think about it, right? I mean, you know, we suffered the breakdown of Detroit, Michigan here. And somehow we managed to survive. And of course, we're worried about something. It's kind of like when we worried about Cyprus a couple of years ago,
right?
Like it's a big deal, which is not. So you don't get involved in any of that news yourself. And of course, when you go on air, you simply say, you know, so if you're looking at the markets right now and all of them, you know, give us a feel for what you're thinking overall based on the technical analysis that you've done. And if you're looking, you know, at any, pick a couple of markets that you're watching more actively,
okay,
obviously, and tell us what you're thinking.
Well, first off, you got to understand, you know, their motivations for the guys on TV, a lot of them, it's infotainment. You know, they're trying to get you emotional so you'll continue to watch so that they can pay their advertisers. They're not there to help investors make money, unfortunately. So a lot of times it doesn't help you to watch your 6 or 8 hours of financial television because you're going to get very few nuggets that are going to help you make money. So to get into the markets, you know, my thinking is this, that any news is already built into the price. It's no longer news. It's history. It's like going into reading an encyclopedia. The market's already factored in. It's already moved forward. And, you know, the concerns are always the unknown knowns. We've been talking about Greece for 5 years. If somebody hasn't lowered their exposure to Greece, and all the American banks do. The American banks have a $40 billion exposure to Greece. That's zero. That's nothing. I mean, it's tiny, tiny, tiny. So the whole Greece thing to pay it off is, I think, only $300 billion. So it's really not a big deal, but it's something that gets, you know, there's a wall of worry. People want to have a concern. A lot of people are fighting the last battle, and they're treating this like 2008, 2009 again, whereas the fundamentals are dramatically different. So my thinking is, when I read something or when I hear a news story, that someone had to research that story, someone had to write that story, someone had to edit that story, and someone had to publish that story. So by the time we get it, it's no longer news. It's already factored in. So looking at the markets now, what's most important to me are a couple things. It's how the markets reacted last week going into what I would say was just a binary event. You know, it's either something was going to happen good or something was going to happen bad over the weekend. The market did not factor in the bad part. Essentially, we were unchanged on the week last week. The VIX was exactly unchanged, and the VIX coming into the week was actually down 25% or 30% on the year. So the expectations were that this was going to be a non-event, and it surprised the market, I guess, with Greece's hubris in the situation and not wanting to solve the problem. But you know, technically speaking, I have to look at things over a period of days and look at things over or really on a weekly basis. We broke down. Now let's see what happens by week's end, see where we are, because one day is not going to break the trend. There are a number of things that are still very, very positive, but sometimes healthy markets need a shakeout, and then it's how the markets respond. We responded positively each and every time over the last 5 years, so let's see what happens in the next week or so and see if we can get back into that larger trading channel. We've been trading sideways, absolutely sideways for 3 months between 2120 and 2080. In the S&P, and is sideways in the Dow as well. So
Hold that thought. We're going to come back right after the break. I am with my man, Alan Nuckman. Big Al's Chicken, which is what we're going to talk about, but Bullseye Options, also a regular contributor to all the major TV networks, and again, purely a numbers guy, doesn't get involved, doesn't get emotional, except about his chicken. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back right after the break with more from Alan Nuckman, The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and you know, I tell you, every time I see this guy start to work up an appetite, he's always got food in hand. My man Alan Nuckman, who's does a lot of Bloomberg, CNBC, Fox, and as well as his own market morning market stir. But Alan, I know that you know, you've been in the business for a long time. You've had a great passion for boneless chicken ribs, and I think you've finally have solved the mystery, and you finally have gotten it going, and you're now, actually, I know that a couple of weeks ago, you did a big special on CBC, and you went to the venture guys, and tell us the story, and tell us, you know, bring us up to date on how it started. I know Big Al's Chicken has been around forever, but you finally are now starting to really make it a real business.
Starting to get some traction.
So tell us, tell us about it, and about building the business, and what are your plans?
Well, it came out of studying the corn markets. That's what we do. You and I see the markets all day long. And our minds are trained, you know, good or bad, some people will say, to recognize opportunity and to see things, you know, in the market. So looking at corn, corn's back above $4 for December corn. That's a story in itself that, you know, everybody thought that the crop was fully made. And, you know, it's only June, and the market, you know, had made its harvest lows, and now you're seeing a major bout of short covering, and the market's bounced back. There's still a lot of things that can happen in the corn market during the course of the summer. We, you know, Mother Nature is very unpredictable. But studying corn prices, I used to go to the national chicken conventions because chicken is simply corn in another bag. Now, that's their major input when it comes to chicken production is corn. So I would go to these events to try and figure out how the big boys were hedging their corn prices. And in reality, they really don't hedge corn, which is unbelievable to me, considering how much corn they go through and, you know, what their costs are and so forth. They just have the mentality that every 7 or 8 years, they're going to get whacked. And those other years are going to be fine, and they're going to save money by not hedging themselves. So, you know, I thought that was interesting. But by attending these events, I recognized that they're looking, they're scrambling for other chicken products. And it's an environment they're really trying to get some other things moving. And I realized there's something that I make in my backyard, or I have for a dozen years, some healthy barbecue that we could really apply to the marketplace. So, you know, who doesn't love barbecue? Who doesn't love chicken? I've taken those two ideas and combined them after spending some time in Texas. I took a pork dry rub that I use on my ribs and put it on a special cut of bone-in. It actually has a bone, hence the name the rib. The handle to hold on to, a bone-in piece of skinless chicken, smoke it with an authentic Texas dry barbecue rub, and you're eating barbecue. You're not thinking chicken. You're thinking barbecue. So I took this idea, got a producer, get it made. It comes frozen in a bag like you would get chicken tenders or chicken fingers. You heat it up in your oven in a baking sheet, and you've got healthy barbecue that's got 75% less fat and calories than pork ribs, and it has all the taste of pork ribs, and it's very, very convenient. So it's something that I've done as a foodie. You know, it's one of the things that relaxes me in this you know, unique vocation or occupation that we have. And I'm taking it to market, trying to get in grocery stores now.
So, you know, first of all, I know you have a website. What is the website?
Chickenribs.com.
Chickenribs.com.
That in itself gets attention. People are like, what are chicken ribs? And I actually had some difficulty with the USDA in my packaging. You know, I own the name Chicken Ribs, and the trademark is the USDA. You know, I know you're not a big fan of government regulation. I usually don't have any problems with it, but in this particular instance, it took months and months and months to get them to let me use chicken ribs, because it's not a chicken rib technically. It's a whole piece of chicken with a bone in it, and it's smoked. And I had explained to them that, well, you know, a chicken finger is not actually a finger either. So,
well, when I'm president, which I am running for president right now. Okay, I will make sure that I take care of that part for you for sure, because the chicken ribs, they are delicious, and Al had done a couple of cookouts over at the Chicago Board of Optics chain out in the courtyard. So how did tell us about the experience when you brought it to CNBC and how that worked out.
So that was fun. They have something called Power Pitch. It's a little mini version of Shark Tank. Everybody loves Shark Tank, but I'm not ready for Shark Tank. Yeah. Power Pitch, they give you, you get 60 seconds, and you give them your pitch, and then there's three panelists, and they ask you questions, and they decide at the end whether they're in or they're out. So the panelists were interesting. One was a venture capital guy that started some healthy restaurants. The other was a renowned chef in Harlem. And the last guy who really worried me was the host of restaurant startup, Kim Love is his name, and he had made his mark in the world with barbecue in Fort Worth, Texas. So I knew I had my, work cut out for me with Kim. The first two guys were good. Their main questions were how, you know, is the market penetration questions, which is a challenge to get in grocery stores. I didn't realize how difficult it is, but what I found with my chicken is that if people taste it, they love it. So it's a matter of getting trials. So, you know, like in Costco with the samples and stuff like that. So that's what I need to do. The second guy, the chef, he thought that it should have some sauce, but the idea behind it is you're tasting barbecue and you're not tasting sauce. So the chicken rib has the flavor from the rub and the hickory smoke, so it's authentic barbecue. And sauces are very regional. If I put a sauce on it, people in Texas aren't going to like my sauce. If I put a sauce on it, people in South Carolina and North Carolina aren't going to like a different sauce. Kansas City's going to like a different sauce. So if you put a sauce on it, people like it, they're not going to like the product. The last guy was who kept me up at night going into the shows. Mr. Love is from Texas, and he questioned the authenticity of my product. And because it doesn't use mesquite, but mesquite would be overwhelming. Smoke should be an enhancer or a flavor, or it shouldn't be the whole flavor on the product. So I use hickory like I would and like I do for pork ribs. So that's the idea behind it. But when it was all said and done, I got three in, and the host Mandy, the Australian lady that everybody knows, she gave me an in as well. So I think what that does is it opens doors. Now I can go to a lot of grocery stores and grocery chains, and I've got something to show them that the product has legs. And
you used to have legs, right? Until you cut them off.
We're not using the chicken legs, but yes, it does. And that's another aspect of it. One part of it is the arbitrage. This, a lot of chicken gets shipped to Russia and other countries because in America, people focus on just the tenderloin and the chicken breast. So this barbecue piece helps from a sustainability standpoint, and that's something big that Walmart is into right now, is sustainability. And this will, you know, this helps from a price standpoint, because I can, you know, use some of this chicken instead of getting it shipped away. So you know, there's a lot of advantages, and that's how our minds operate. You and I, Todd, is that we look at things a little bit differently, just from the way that we have to evaluate the markets, you know, over the years, that I can quickly evaluate something in my mind and see an opportunity that others might not. And hopefully this has been a lot of fun. I love food, and I love feeding people. And hopefully this gets in grocery stores soon, and they just take it out of your freezer case, bring it home, and you've got barbecue anytime without spending the 6 hours smoking it yourself.
So you smoke it and get it ready to go, and it comes packaged. Mm-hmm. And how does it come packaged?
It comes packaged in a pound and a half package, frozen. So there's usually about six pieces in here in the package. You just take it out, heat it up in your oven, and you're ready to go.
So what's the prospects? Are you in anywhere yet?
Yeah, we're working on it. I've got some small stores that are working on it. I'm really, my angle that I'm trying to accomplish right now is Whole Foods here in the local area, because they're very local. They want local products and so forth. That's different because they have a certain requirement for their chicken, that it has to be grain fed, has to be antibiotic free, and so forth. And they have to have certain authorization. So that's where I think it could be a good start. I think that audience is, you know, open-minded, and, you know, everybody's looking for something good with chicken, because the reality is a chicken breast is a chicken breast. No matter what you do to it, it still tastes like a chicken breast. This tastes like barbecue. You're thinking barbecue. My family members that don't, you know, that only eat certain white meat chicken will eat this because they're not thinking chicken, they're thinking barbecue. So the dry rub and the smoke make a huge difference, and hence the chicken rib is born.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it is delicious. Alan brought me when I was doing a TV spot. He made me eat it while I was on TV, so I had barbecue on my breath, and I had a chicken in my hand while I was talking about the markets. But yeah, it's really exciting, and I'm really glad that, you know, you're finally getting this thing going, because I know it has been, you know, one of your passions. And what's the website again?
It's chickenribs.com. Now, what I was going to talk about is corn. When I talk about, you know, chicken is just corn in other bags. So when you figure out how much corn it takes to make a chicken, it's very interesting. There's not a whole lot of corn that, you know, it's not a whole lot in dollar terms that goes into a chicken. A bushel of corn is about 56 pounds. It takes 2 pounds of corn to make 1 pound of chicken. So if you look at a 4 pound chicken that you get at the store, it's got about 8 pounds of corn in it. And so that works out to be about 7.5 cents per pound, with corn prices trading here at $3.50 or $4. So it's really only 55 cents worth of corn that goes in a chicken. So it's an interesting flow through when you think about it. Now, when corn prices got to $8, that kind of threw things out of whack. You know, that's why I was asking the corn producers how they were handling the markets back then. But that was a once in a lifetime event. Let's see now, with ethanol becoming less and less of an issue, that corn prices can be a little bit more stable. I remember when I was a kid, corn prices were below $2.
Well, in 1999, I bought corn at $1.90. But this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with Alan Nuckman, voice of many different TV networks, Bloomberg, CNBC, Fox, but also chickenribs.com. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with Alan after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Alan Nuckman, frequent contributor to CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox, The Bubba Show, Traders Unplugged, but also the founder and inventor of the chicken rib, and now with his special barbecue, has made it through the big tests of the mini Shark Tank through CNBC. And so, Alan, as we look at chicken, has the bird flu affected your business at all?
No, it's interesting, that it's, the bird flu gets news, and it's unfortunate, but in the scope of things, it's such a small amount of birds. You would be amazed at the amount of chickens that are produced in America on an annual basis. So, yes, it's been millions, but that's a kind of a rounding error when it comes to the amount of chickens that are produced. So, at this point, you know, obviously anything can happen. They've done a good job containing it. And they're very vigilant about how they, you know, keep this you know, from moving from farm to farm. But at this point, it's not an issue at all.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we tend to, as Americans, we tend to blow everything out of proportion anyways, because again, it becomes the news. And, you know, it's
right.
it, you know, we talked a little bit about grains, and that kind of goes into your business, the chickenribs.com. But, you know, as I've said, and as you know, I do a lot of grain commentary for agricultural stuff. And, you know, I kept saying when corn was down at, you know, 320 and 350 and soybeans were down at $9, I kept saying, hey, look, you can sell it here if you want. And if you're a short-term trader, yeah, you might be able to capitalize. But
you might be able to squeeze. You might be able to squeeze a little bit out of it. But the risk-reward was on the upside.
That's right. And if you're a long-term trader, you have to look to be a buyer of these products. Unless we're going to stop eating and we're going to genetically engineer food, you know, through a pill, you're going to need corn. And you're going to need wheat. And you're going to need soybeans. And that was what people don't understand is, there's certain products that you know that you're going to need. Now, they may not go up dramatically right away, but as an investment point, you want to look at that as an investment.
It's got tangible value. It's like my saying that, you know, sometimes annoys people, and it all comes back to commodities, that commodities are the building blocks, the baseline for all economic activity. And, you know, when you're talking about corn or wheat, you know, there's a reason for that. You know, it's always going to be in demand in some way, shape, or form, and it has a certain value. I mean, that value is going to fluctuate, but it's not going to zero.
So, you know, as we look at the rest of the commodity space, Alan, we've seen, you know, oil, you know, obviously was down at 42, and every expert was mm-hmm. saying, oh, it's going to 20. And, of course, I said, you're nuts, and it's
right.
irresponsible to make that call. But now we see that oil's kind of settled somewhere between, you know, let's say 56 and 62, and it's kind of just jerking off back and forth. But I think the interesting trade right now is natural gas. Have you been watching natural gas at all?
I've been watching oil a little bit more closely because oil is going nowhere. And when a market goes nowhere for a long period of time, it's just setting up for some sort of event-driven push. And it's been pivoting around this $60 level for now 3 weeks. And so it'll be very interesting what sort of catalyst, you know, gives it a push. But natural gas, you know, is something that, you know, people have been talking about for years. Well, there's too much gas, there's too much gas, there's too much gas. But, you know, there's going to be increased uses of it. And, you know, my thinking is that why aren't we on natural gas cars? I mean, doesn't that make sense? If we're the largest producer in the world, why you can convert your engine and your car to natural gas for like $5,000, and we got more natural gas than you can shake a stick at. They still burn it off. I mean, they burn it off on oil wells and, you know, just to get to the oil because we've got so much of it.
And that is funny because you would think, you know, through all the troubles we've been in the years over oil, of course, now they've decided that, you know, with the shale producers, we can produce more of our own oil, and actually we're going to be self-sufficient in the next 5 or 6 years. But you would think, you know, at some point with all the EPA guys and all the problem with oil and the reason we didn't want to drill for it in the first place, that, you know, natural gas and solar power have always been, you know, the secondary potential energy things. But of course, now that we've got plenty of oil, nobody cares about that thing, those anymore. But why is that? And what do you think? Don't you think we should be now finally developing that alternative energy space? And I mean, I know it's got to do with big oil and, of course, politics
right.
and all the other BS. But don't you think it's time that we now really take the time to develop those products?
Yeah, I mean, it's just an economic issue that it's easy to keep doing what we've been doing. Obviously, there are pressures from politics to keep us to, you know, be doing what we're doing. But think about a country like Germany. Germany is the number one user of is solar, I think, in the world now. I mean, and they're cloudy half the year. So, you know, it only behooves us, especially with this resource of natural gas, to, you know, in the city you see natural gas buses, you see fleets of commercial vans and vehicles, natural gas. It should be an easy deal. I don't know, you know, why it hasn't caught on. But, you know, you're seeing things like the Tesla, the electric cars that are still, even with oil prices low and gas prices low, you know, Tesla's still in great shape. And I think that really is more so than a commercial venture. I think it's more of a public relations venture that people want that car. That car, believe it or not, a Tesla electric car can beat a BMW, you know, in 0 to 60. It's amazing the power and the speed of that car. And I'm waiting for that SUV version of the Tesla. But I think that's fantastic. I wouldn't trade the stock necessarily at these levels, but it's a fantastic example of America. I mean, coming out with an electric car and having that valuation and that cachet is amazing. But get back to natural gas. You know, it's bottomed out at 250. You look at it, you know, it was, if you go back just a couple of years, you know, we were at $6 just back in February 2014. You know, so, you know, how much lower can it go? Again, I think those people that are saying, oh, there's all this gas, it's got to go lower. You know, what's the downside? Is it going to get below 2? I think there's more upside potential, you know, as far as demand goes and events go. In natural gas, and there is downside from these levels.
And that's a big thing that you focus on, is more value play than actually the trading of it. Because, again, for most people, you know, you and I can go down on the floor and trade, you know, and take a long-term capital gain in 15 minutes. But for the average guy, they're not able to do that, correct? I mean, that's the bottom line.
And that's what I try and encourage people to look longer term and use options. Longer term, so at least, you know, 3 to 6 months, you're looking, you know, to participate. Take that, use in an option, an in-the-money option, a lot of times in stock options that that allow you to participate at a stock substitution strategy. Buying the right option, giving yourself a high probability with enough time to be right is really, really the idea here. Otherwise, you have to have a very disciplined plan, and the reality is most people have jobs, and they can look at these markets more from their lifestyle, more on a weekly basis, and look at things over a period of weeks and months as opposed to day-to-day action. Unless you have the discipline and the time and the mentality, you know, the day-to-day action will drive you crazy. You got to look big picture. You got to look weeks and months and try and find these swing moves, and you'll be much more successful. You'll sleep a lot better at night, and using options, you can control your risk.
You'll be a lot happier, and you'll be able to sit back and enjoy those chicken ribs with a beer. And that special,
exactly.
That special rubs.
That's, so 4th of July is coming up.
You know what? And so when we have those chicken ribs at chickenribs.com, can I buy them right now online? Can I buy it from you right now?
No, we're not online just yet. That's something I'm working on. There's a bit of a challenge because to be shipping chicken in the summer with dry ice, it's a bit costly to do that right now. It works for lobsters. You know, somebody's willing to do that for lobster, but for chicken ribs, We have to, you know, you have to get a more minimal order than just a bag.
Gotcha. So it's but it is bagged, and it's going to be in a grocery store near you, especially. So you got to check it out. Seriously, the food is terrific. It's a fantastic concept. I think that especially if you are more health conscious, and you know, again, you know, a lot of us are, you know, eating more chicken than beef, and you know, it's really a great idea, and I wish you, you know, all the success in the world with the chicken rib. It is really good, and do check out his site, but you know, also keep an eye on I call him Nucky. Keep an eye on him on the on air, because he does bring, again, it's kind of like the Bubba Show. You got to bring a cooler head to the market, because you can't get involved with the day-to-day spins that everybody wants to put on it, because in the big scheme of life, markets are going to do what they're going to do, and they are absolute, and they're never wrong. They never make a mistake, because that is the price we're going to be. Alan Uckman, thanks so much for being
thanks
on the Bubba Show. Chickenribs.com, also seen on CNBC and Fox and all the other good networks. This has been the Bubba Show. We were with Alan Uckman today. Everybody have a great day. We appreciate you being here. Check out thebubbashow.org. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. See you tomorrow.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.